In today's episode, JJ and I talk about Airwolf, Mike hates a commercial, and Samantha's glad she's not a big nerd. This is Coraline. So, we're ready to talk about some movies, or a movie specifically.
Some movie, yeah.
It is some movie. Hi, welcome to Funsphere Movie Club. I'm Josh.
I'm the other Josh.
I'm the other Mike. Dang it.
And I'm the Josh's Josh.
That's right. All right, today we are talking about Coraline.
Let me get
the, oh crap, did I just shut down all my notes? Son of a bitch. I don't know, Samantha, why don't you tell us about this movie a little bit while I get some notes up here.
All right, this is it's by Leica, which is a great studio. They do all stop motion stuff, based on a book by Neil Gaiman, which I did read. Directed by Henry Selick, the actual is it Selick? Yeah. The actual director of Nightmare Before Christmas. Everyone mm-hmm. thinks it was Tim Burton, but, you know, it's not. Actually. It's just his idea.
Yep.
And it is about a girl who moves to Oregon with her family, and she discovers another world within the apartment, which is an old-ass house that's been blocked off into apartments, and it's actually not that as good as she thought.
Okay. You know what? That is a fantastic introduction, so I don't feel the need to add any more notes to this. Okay. Except the one thing I will mention, this is produced by, I think it's called Leica?
We talked about Leica. Stop motion studio.
Yeah, okay. My bad. Sorry.
Dakota Fanning was 9 years old when they started working on this movie, and I think it was 16 when she was like, not maybe like 14 when it came out.
Yep. Okay.
That was my first impression of this movie is, wow, I would not imagine casting any of these people as voice actors. It worked, but it was just very surprising.
Wait a minute. Are you kidding me? You wouldn't cast Keith David as a voice actor?
Well, yeah. Well, I'm talking about the.
If only we were allowed to talk about the main cast.
Oh, you know it's banned. You know it's banned. I was gonna say, but yeah. Okay.
What, like Terry Hatcher? Yeah.
Terry Hatcher
and PC.
Oh, John. Why did I forget his name? He's Hodgman. Judd Hodgman. Yeah, he owns the Maximum Fun Network, or used to.
Yeah.
Started it.
Yep. Well, I was going to say there's Dawn French. She's a very famous British actress.
Yeah. This time around, I realized that Bobinski was his face from Deadwood.
Ian McShane, yes.
Now I was like very easily able to recognize. And American Gods. Another two Neil Gaiman things.
Yes, indeed. Indeed it is. I was going to bring that up too. So this was your suggestion for the movie club, correct,
yeah.
Samantha?
Yes.
So tell us your history with the film.
I saw the teaser trailer. I've always loved stop motion. I saw the teaser trailer. I loved the music in it, which this movie also introduced me to the composer, Bruno Coulet, perhaps? Coulet? I don't know how to pronounce it. And it just looked like the exact brand of creepy that I love.
Okay.
So then I had to watch it, and I did, in the theater when it came out, and I loved it. And I haven't watched it for a couple of years, but yeah, I still love it. It's great.
Okay.
And I read the book, and I was surprised at how bluntly it was written. But then I realized Neil Gaiman wrote it for his daughter. And like, mm-hmm. it's just about like courage, basically. Like finding courage within yourself.
Okay. So I'll ask, when I was reading some of the notes, the book and the film are different, are they not?
Yeah, they're pretty different.
Okay. Gotcha.
It's essentially the same, but the book's very short.
Yeah, it's a novella, it says.
I read that the her friend isn't even in the book.
Right. I know that they made him so that she wouldn't be talking to herself all the time.
Makes sense. Okay. How familiar are you folks with Mr. Neil Gaiman?
Pretty.
I'm pretty familiar with him, too.
I follow him on Tumblr.
Okay. So, I was surprised to see that he was involved with this. I think I may have known that at the time when I saw it. I just remember watching it on... I think this is back when I still had a disc subscription to Netflix, so they would mail me movies. Yeah. RIP. They just shut that off, I think, maybe this year.
What?
Actually. Yeah.
Wow.
So I remember getting it for that and watching it and being like, oh, yeah, this is all right. I, too, like stop motion animation. But I will be also the first to say this is, I think, the weakest of the animation studios films that they've made.
Really?
Now, it's their first one, too. Yes.
Are you a Paranorman fan?
I do like Paranorman. Yeah. It's very good. So, like I said, I think it's very interesting that you have a combination of this. And I have a question for you guys. And maybe this is going to be mostly for Samantha. So, I too got the vibe that this would have been like Tim Burton-ish.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, have I ever seen a picture of Neil Gaiman and Tim Burton in the same room together? Because it seems like the fact that they've not collaborated on anything just seems criminal. To me, at least.
I'm trying to remember if there's like some sort of beef between them.
I'm trying to, maybe it's something with Helena Bonham Carter. They've both got some kind of I think they're both friends with her or something like that.
They both, so it's funny because, you know, Tim Burton has a weird relationship with Helena Bonham Carter. And yeah. Neil Gaiman has a weird...
I thought they were married.
They were married. They're maybe estranged now. They're weird. And Neil Gaiman has a very tumultuous relationship with Amanda Palmer, musical artist, who's very strange as well. So,
But, like...
They like weird chicks.
They do.
Yeah.
But, I was also surprised by all the people that work together with Gaiman in the future. You've got... Ian McShane, who is in American Gods.
That's a great show.
It's a good book, too. I'm more familiar with the book. I was going to say, did he do anything with Keith David? No. Okay, so that was the biggest thing for me of watching this. I was like, wow, this one is like the weakest of their movies for me. I did like it, though. I don't like strongly dislike it. But I was like, I'm kind of ready for this to be over. As like cool as some of the scenes were, one note I found here, apparently the director originally thought, he's like, if I adapted this, this could maybe be a 47-minute movie, was his literal quote.
Right. Yeah.
So it honestly, I think it could have worked a little bit better as a short, or, you know, a 30-minute special or something like that. So. No, I don't know. I guess those are my opinions.
Maybe. I don't know. I think one thing that I always disliked about it was the first scene with the ghost children. I don't like how they sort of set Coraline on that little quest, because to me it's like too, like, find our eyes and free us. Like, I don't like that part. But
yeah.
Overall, this is my favorite of their movies, actually. But, you know, I know most people like Paranorman more. But I just like thinking about, I think I just like the ideas presented of like the Beldam and like, where did she come from? At the end, I'm pretty sure of, I mean, like, not like kind of skipping over the plot more, but whatever, you know, when she's looking for the well in the beginning and they find it, and Wybie tells her that it's so deep that if you go down the day, you'll look up and see stars. Right. I think the other world is like the well, because she went there in the daytime, and it was nighttime.
It's always nighttime on the other side.
And then the sound of like the lid coming over. So I'm wondering if they just gave her the key back at the end.
I don't like it's. They kind of dropped the plot a little bit on certain parts of this. Like, I agree. Like, that connection of the well is not really well established with the other world. But you're right. I think it is supposed to be the other side of the well is the other world. And just another note, has Terry Hatcher done anything since this film? Like, the only thing I know her from is
Desperate Housewives.
Lois
Seinfeld.
Lois and Clark. The New Adventures of Superman.
Desperate Housewives, right? That's why she was cast, because she was really famous from Desperate Housewives at the time, I think.
I have mm-hmm. no frame of reference for that show. So
I've never watched it, but I'm pretty sure she was one of the main ones. Yeah, she is.
Okay. So she went on to do that.
She had already done that.
Okay. Since then.
It doesn't look like it.
Nothing.
Looks like Hallmark movies.
Okay. Like,
she was in Supergirl.
Oh, okay.
Oh, she's doing a lot of voice acting.
I can see it. She's got a good voice. I think all these people that are on here have a good voice. One other real quick side note that I noticed. You know when the other father is singing a song, you know who that actually is?
They might be giants.
Really? Yes.
I love that they hired them for 30 seconds.
Exactly.
No, they, so I read that they had originally hired them to do the entire soundtrack, and they wrote like 12 songs, but they only ended up using two.
Oh, right. There was a moment when it was going to be more of a musical, and it ended up not happening.
I guess.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I like what that. Is I really with like the composer.
So they're like, well, I guess we'll just use these songs and other projects.
What is with Henry Selick of like his soundtracks keep getting like hijacked? So like you have They Might Be Giants get bumped, and then Danny Elfman re-recorded all the Jack songs from the original Nightmare on Elm Street.
Nightmare on Elm Street.
A Nightmare Before Christmas, because the guy that plays his speaking voice did his singing voice, but apparently Elfman was like, nah, I can do it better, and did. So that's interesting.
Well, I'm not upset about the composer they went with. I really like the soundtrack for this movie. Mm. And I looked him up, and I found he really likes using like choirs singing nonsense languages, because he did that in two other films. But I really like the music.
Okay. So.
Yeah.
All right, Mike or JJ, what did you think about it?
Yeah, go ahead.
I enjoyed it. I wasn't sure where they were going with it. Like, I spent the first half of the movie thinking, like, is the theme that she just doesn't like her parents? But then what you were saying, like, the whole third act is just some random video game quest that gets thrown in. And then she comes out and her parents are cool now.
Yeah, well, okay. Well, I think I understood it a lot better this time watching it. Like, she's 11. They just moved across the country. So she's already, like, upset. I don't know why she was so mean to YB right off the bat. But I just think it's, again, misplaced anger. And then her parents are very busy with their writing projects. So they're being kind of neglectful. And because she's 11, it's, like, amplified.
Mm.
She's just acting out. That's what I think. But go.
So,
but I agree about the video game quest.
I think it's terrifying. you know, that movie came out when my son was, 4 years old. So that would have been something renting from Netflix or something like that. That I'll just put it in. Yeah. I'll take a nap while he watches this movie. And luckily, I waited till Kubo before I watched any of those. And then, So
Kubo's but sad.
That could have been terrifying. Like, or having the fear, like, as an adult watching that and having the fear that my son doesn't like me, you know, or something like that. And there's a better place at home. And if you think about it in the context of, oh, I'm just going to let him watch this while I take a nap, then I'm not, you know, I'm just like her parents in the movie. So watching it again, actually kind of scared me a little bit more. Like, I am terrified of that movie now. Thinking about that, I could have watched it in 2009 or 10, just put it in when he was 5 years old, and I'm taking a nap, and he's just staring at this TV, and then, you know, building this hate for his parents or something like that. So,
huh? That is an interesting take on that. I obviously, not being a parent, I could never get that point of view, but I could see that. It's like it kind of like it preys upon your worst fear as a parent that you're a, or that, you know, you're a bad parent when
that they just fixate on your flaws.
They just, yeah, that's all it is.
Like, I mean, every parent has to work. They have to take care of their business. They, you know, and yeah. Yeah. And then all of a sudden your kids just hate you for that. And that's just terrifying looking at it that way.
Huh.
Yeah. Wow. That's really a perspective we can't have.
That's true.
That's good. Good.
I say the only other thing I thought it was like, I was like, is this supposed to be some sort of like modern retelling of maybe Alice in Wonderland kind of? And I was like, eh, maybe not. I don't think I'll bring that up. I don't think it is.
It's just, it has elements of it.
Yeah, I could see that. I guess that maybe was my thought.
I love other Spink and Forcible's performance. I remember really liking their, like, at the end of it when they're doing whatever that monologue or dialogue is. It's from Shakespeare.
Yeah,
I really liked that because they had really good voices. But
well, I think they're both stage actors by trade. So yes, they probably would have been familiar with that.
I thought that was great, but also obviously before that was just very funny.
Yeah.
Coraline's reaction to the Birth of Venus.
Yeah.
<as well. laughs>
I thought that was a pretty risky move for what is ostensibly a children's film.
Yes, I also thought.
Yeah.
So much movement.
Yes. So much movement.
It's so that'd be traumatizing alone for a 10-year-old. But and I love the little circus mice. I think they're cute.
Yep.
And it was I liked the creepiness. I think just the vibes, the atmosphere was good because it's all bright and colorful, but then there's like a real emptiness to everything.
Yeah.
Over there. Very creepy.
It's kind of funny thinking how the medium of stop motion lends itself more to like visually unsettling.
Yes.
Yeah.
Vibes. Like, I just, most movies end up having some kind of dark, twisted representation.
I think it might be the movement a little bit. And
it is. Yes, it's definitely.
And they just lean into it with their character.
There's
models.
Just something about the human brain, like something that moves that way just deeply unsettles us. It's there's been a lot of like research into that, like our primitive memories and stuff like that we remember, like movements and stuff like that, heights of certain things will make us like unnaturally, like there's no logical reason to be afraid, but it's that lizard part of your brain that just it triggers something in your instinct. It's the uncanny valley is what it's usually called. But yeah, it's the movement being off really.
Yeah.
Throws you for
a
loop.
To your point, how long did it take before you, saw the scene with Large Marge and Pee-wee's Big Adventure, you know, with your eyes?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I think the first 4 or 5 showings of that, I always closed my eyes. It's too scary.
I was like, or how unsettling was Tool's video, music video back in the day? And like, and all those movies that Wes Anderson does,
Fantastic.
Yeah, or The Isle of Dogs.
Isle of Dogs, yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny. It's like these are kind of technically live action.
Technically, yeah.
It's
mad
all
props
physically
to
there.
To the people that have the time and patience to do this type of stuff. So
I remember the making of video because they always make those featurettes and
how
the cherry blossoms were popcorn. So I like trying to see if I can see the popcorn
And the snow was super glue and baking soda.
Oh, okay.
Oh, it like mixed it up, so clump.
Yeah.
So good. So cool. Yeah. They'd make all of that. I think what I like about this movie, besides the general atmosphere and like the look of it, is just I have a lot of questions, and I'm curious about the like origins of things and like mostly just like how and why, and I want to know more, but I don't think they'll ever go into it again because it was, you know, based on something.
I did see that this has a lot of when I was looking it up on IMDb, there's a lot of fan made sequels and prequels and
oh,
stuff.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
People.
So they're definitely trying to build a universe.
I think that, yeah, there's a lot of room to play. Like, there's a lot of ideas presented, and you're given the tools, I think, to be able to create more on your own.
Mm-hmm.
But you said this was a story for his daughter, right?
Yeah.
So
yep.
In telling this story, he was telling about this better place, but they will take your eyes and switch them with buttons? I mean, is it something just...
I'm trying to remember exactly what was different. I know that, like, the other mother is in it. But also she has to, like, fight a bunch of bees because this whole thing, like, it... Like, there was, like a valley with thorns and bees or something, which is funny. But, for us, it's funny because of Bee Valley. Mm. But, it has something to do with bees. Like, it was different. It's kind of like Stardust. I read Stardust after really liking the movie, and that also is totally different at the end. Not very cinematic. So, like, I can see why they changed it. Because the end of Stardust, the book, I don't know if you're familiar with the movie. The movie ends with, like,
I watched
you know,
the movie.
Like a fight, you know, with the witch and stuff. The book ends with them basically rolling diplomacy. And they're like, hey, witch, why don't we not do this anymore? And she's like, all right. So I can see why they changed it for the film. But I can't really remember.
Okay. That was a good movie. I could remember. I think I saw that I don't remember which one came out first, but maybe I can look that up.
I want to say
Stardust came out first.
Yeah. I remember that had terrible trailers, and I thought this. Oh,
yeah. I remember. I remember the trailers made it look like the movie was gonna suck.
Yeah, 2007.
And then when it came out, I was like, oh, this movie was actually really good.
Yeah, it was directed by the guy who helped produce Snatch and did what's his name? He did the Kingsman movies, right? Am I wrong on that?
Let's see here. Oh, this is about the book. I wanted to
Matthew
see
Vaughn
film.
Directed
yeah, Matthew
it.
Vaughn. Yeah. Yeah. So it was probably right after him and Guy Ritchie kind of split up. And then, so I would say that movie came out 2004 or 5. Maybe 6.
Stardust? Yeah. Came out 2007.
Oh, okay.
Very close.
Man, it had a murderer's row in that movie, Stardust. Of actors, it's got Peter O'Toole.
Yeah, this is
Michelle
where
Pfeiffer,
I knew what's his face from before Daredevil.
Yeah, Charlie Cox.
Yeah, yep.
Sienna Miller, Ricky Gervais, and narration by Ian McKellen.
I've never even heard of this.
You've never seen it? Well, I'll probably pick it at some point.
I was gonna say it's a kind of obscure. I gotta say,
the trailers were just bad. Trailers.
That it really was. I remember that, Samantha. That is wild. You and I both remember, like, man, this movie's going to blow.
Yeah, because my mom said she went to see it, and I remember thinking, this looks like it's going to be the cheesiest, dumbest movie ever. And then we watched it, and I was like, that was great.
Yeah.
I want to watch it right now. And I'm going to buy the book. And I'm going to make an OC.
Yeah, nothing about this movie looks familiar. You know, normally you won't see something, but you still, like, notice the posters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The commercials. But I guess 2007, we were already starting to enter the world of no television.
Yeah.
Because I'm pretty sure I had Netflix at that point, so I never watched anything on cable.
Yeah, I think that was the time that the streaming services began in earnest. So it was kind of the death of television. Plus, 2008 was the year of the writer's strike. Mm. So we had that like basic year of like no new television was going on, or no new movies. So it was like everything kind of moved online.
I honestly don't know, because that was like the height of my anime obsession, so that's all I watched.
Okay. Gotcha.
Just Adult Swim, like Inuyasha. Oh, we're rewatching Inuyasha now, but like
yeah. God, what was I watching it? 2007.
Breaking Bad hadn't started yet, had it?
No.
Oh. I don't know.
Maybe.
It's older than you think. It's one of those was Sopranos finishing up?
I guess
up?
So. I was Lost. Lost was out around that yep. time.
Sopranos was finishing up.
And
Sopranos.
30 Rock.
Yes, I was watching 30 Rock.
Yeah, because 30 Rock got hit by the strike in 2008, right? They stopped a bit.
Yeah, they had a shortened season that year. Arrested Development, I think, was already done.
Yeah, probably.
Heroes.
Because it was 2003 to
Heroes, the TV show. I remember the second season was
2006.
Terrible because of the writer's strike.
I did start watching Heroes. I got into it right when it was ending, and everybody said it was bad.
Yeah.
Because I hadn't seen the beginning, so.
Oh, okay.
I just remember they ran that stupid commercial about the Save the Cheerleader.
Save the World. Yep.
Never watched it.
The first season.
I vowed to never watch it because they advertised that one plot point so vehemently.
But her power was very important. That's why they needed to save her.
Who
she
cares?
Cut off her toe with scissors.
Like me as an outsider, having never seen it, that means nothing.
I would, Mike, I would say I respect your ability to never see it just because of that commercial. But if you ever do get interested, the first season and only the first season is worth watching.
Mm. Kind of like
Once Upon a Time. Don't even get me started on that shit.
Yeah. Only the first season is worth watching.
The first season is good. The second season is okay. The second half of the third season is really good. They like figured out how to write again, and then they forgot. And
whenever they started doing half season story arcs, that's when
season two, I was like,
I'm done.
I think Once Upon a Time could have been the perfect two season series. The first season as it is, the second season, them going back to storybook land or whatever and like figuring out life now that they have these two lives full of memories in their heads. Storybrooke, fairy tale land. Done. Once, oh my god, I got so into that, and I've never been disappointed more by a show. Like, always hopeful, always let down.
Yeah, you got me into watching it whenever we had our writing nights.
I was so obsessed with it. But yeah, it had so much potential, and they just suck. They just suck at writing. Like, they're bad. They suck. They're bad. Bad, bad, bad. And you could tell they cast it and like each other. One thing about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., that's such a great show. And also you can tell that they all enjoy each other's company. Like, if the cast is friends, it changes everything. Once Upon a Time was very clicky because a lot of people were coming in and out. Or they would just have to be stuck in Vancouver. Like, the side characters who never knew if they were going to be in an episode still had to stay in Vancouver for, like, months and months and months, not even knowing if they were going to get to work.
Wow.
And that's why Coraline's good.
That's why Coraline's good. Way to bring it back home. Appreciate it.
No one had to stay in Vancouver for months on end.
No one had to stay in Vancouver.
They recorded their dialogue. They went home. Everybody else built the film.
Correct. Correct. Oh.
And it was one of the biggest sets at the time for a stop motion.
Oh, really?
I believe that.
Yeah, I can see that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know what was funny watching it now? I forgot that it was originally in 3D, and it still had some of the, like, the gimmicky stuff.
That was also the time of the 3D gimmicks coming back into theaters and stuff like that.
Before
this was
they
the beginning.
Used 3D for, like, just depth, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say also financial success, cost $60 million, made $131 million. Nice. So not a bad investment. Like I said, I will always be down for any film or anything like that with Keith David, Lord and Savior of the Realm. May he reign.
I hope he's in the live action. That'd be so, and that'd be the worst move on the planet. Oh my god. Anyway.
Pushing Daisies and Fly to the Con.
Poor Pushing Daisies. Those,
poor
those were the other
daisies.
Things I was watching
I
in 2007.
It's so good. It. Blu-ray.
Yeah. That was another one. Man, there was just a ton of shows that just got wrecked by that stuff back in the day. By that writer's strike.
Well, that, and this was the last era of fucking Nielsen reign.
Yeah.
What destroyed Arrested Development? It destroyed Pushing Daisies.
Yep.
Like, the whole being tethered to this archaic model.
Yep.
Of just because you can't get views in the moment means you're not successful and get canceled.
I will also say this is kind of where all the, like, original idea shows started to get wooed away from networks by streaming services instead. Like, I don't think I've seen any show on a network. Like, I'm talking about, like, the big four, Fox, ABC, CBS, NBC. In well over a decade.
I watch Bob's Burgers, but I watch it on Hulu.
Yeah, I watch it on Hulu too. And I will say that, like, I'm talking about, like, live action shows. Now, I think a lot of television now is just like, if it's a really good creative idea, you're first going to try to get a streaming service. And then if you can't make it, maybe a network will pick you up. But I don't think there's any, like, appetite for the risk involving those type of shows anymore. I mean, think about the TV we grew up with. I'm thinking about, like, back to the 80s. You had shows like Knight Rider. You had shows like Airwolf. And those were,
didn't they bring Knight Rider?
They tried, and it was terrible. 2000. Oh yeah, that was Team Knight Rider.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
The whole premise is just like a car.
But yeah, but like we had...
The talks.
Well, it's not just a car. It's
a car.
The car. Car was the bad guy. Kit was the good guy. Okay. Only, like, true Knight Rider nerds are going to know what I'm talking about. That.
Well, I'm glad
that.
I'm not a nerd.
Yeah. But no, like, we had all kinds of crazy shows. We had, like...
the 90s, we had Boy Meets World.
Exact. Well, you had your sitcoms, but you still had, like, sitcoms that took risks and stuff like that, or had creative ideas. Like, you're talking about those shows that were set during, like, you're talking what's the premise of the show you guys were talking about? It's like there's a fairy tale world.
Oh, Once Upon a Time.
Like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Listen, mm-hmm. Once Upon a Time is the Disney version of it's because it's on ABC.
Yeah.
So it's like the Disney version of those fairy tales, but they got cursed by the evil queen from Snow White to live in our world, and they're in this town called Storybrooke, which sort of exists in, like, a pocket dimension almost of the real world. So
it's a pun on Storybook.
Yes,
it's kind of, well, no, it's just think of it like Kingdom Hearts, where they mix Disney and Final Fantasy
I
worlds.
I wish Final Fantasy.
So this is
what's about time.
You just have a side quest in the third season.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that's basically the premise of the show is it's all the Disney licenses mixing with all of the classic storytelling.
Okay.
Yeah, they do add in, like...
or fairy tales.
Yeah, because Rumpelstiltskin's the villain. But And that's not a Disney movie. But they don't have any contact with, like, the outside world. They are aware of it. I don't think they're aware that they don't have any contact with the outside world, if that makes sense.
Well, it was the people from Lost, yes. Right?
Okay.
So there was a lot of, like, let's take the bigger ideas from Lost and mix these in, yeah, as well. Okay. So there's a mystery element involved.
Yeah. So what year did that show come out? I got to look up something. This is
probably like 2010.
Okay.
I want to say.
Since we have the...
maybe later. Maybe like 2012.
I'm looking up something because there's something kind of funny happening here, and it's only
2018.
Funny,
oh, wait,
to
no,
me.
That's the last date. 2011. Oh, so close.
Okay. So what you guys are talking about, I find very interesting because Neil Gaiman is an author and a playwright and everything like that, but he's most famous for his work on comic books. He wrote the Sandman series.
Yeah.
And he kind of invented Harry Potter, but that's not either here or there.
Marvel 1602.
Yes, he did. But basically, the show that you guys are talking about, that show, that's kind of a ripoff of a comic book called Fables.
Mm. It is very similar, but not noir.
Okay. So I just thought I would mention that since we can relate that again to Coraline due to the author. Have you guys watched Sandman?
Yeah.
Okay, so just me and Samantha.
I only watched the first episode.
I had to. Jenna Coleman's in it.
Pretty good.
My favorite thing about it is every actor in it is English, but they pretend not to be. Varying degrees of success, and most of them not great. Especially the kids. Oh, I'm American.
Boy.
Oh, I'm American. I'm just an American kid. But Jenna Coleman. Neil Gaiman also writes Doctor Who episodes.
Yeah, he writes a bunch of stuff. Hmm. I'm surprised his other children's book that I've read, the Graveyard Book, has not been made into a stop motion movie by this company. I think it definitely needs to be.
I bet it will. Their next project is called Wildwood, which is based off something. A book, I believe. Have you guys seen Mirror Mask?
I have.
No.
That's another Neil Gaiman thing, and it's very strange.
It is super strange. I watched it after Coraline. I threw it on the chat. I thought that, and I owned it. I bought it when it came out, and I thought that this is going to be great because I love the effects, and, you know, it's like it just seemed very low end, but I thought it had this kind of charm to it, but it's so bizarre. So bizarre.
It is very weird. It's like a fever dream kind of. It is weird. I think I like it. I've watched it a couple times.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Like, I think I like it, but also there's this weird part, like, I think I don't like it, but it's...
Yeah. It is very weird.
So it's the Deadly Premonition.
Kinda.
Movies.
A little bit.
So, Josh, you were talking about 80s movies. Remember, also in the 80s, you know, they weren't tightly produced as well. You had, what, 24 episodes in a season? And so, to your point, you're talking about Airwolf, for example. And I remember that show being awesome. You know, you bring in the helicopter. But I watched an entire episode a couple months ago about two farmers having a dispute over land, right?
And you need Airwolf.
They send in a helicopter to just shoot things up. It made no sense. And I waited 22 minutes to see the helicopter finally come out and just shoot something and catch a field on fire.
Dispute settled.
Like there's no air, there's no wolf. It's just two guys in overalls fighting this entire episode. What am I watching?
Hurry up and get Ernest Borgnine and Airwolf out there. Jesus. Get on with it.
An episode could have been easily solved in 3 minutes.
Yeah. Oh, that's hilarious. You know what's also funny, JJ? I watched a video essay on YouTube about what happened to the helicopter from Airwolf. So it just keeps going. It ended its life as a
hospital aircraft, which I personally would fake an injury or illness of some sort to be like, wait, that's the one that was Airwolf, right? They're like, yeah,
yeah.
Let's go. Heart attack right now. Take me insurance, to the hospital.
There's no copay. $30,000 later.
And I would write back to them and be like, Airwolf. And they're like, you know what? Good. Covered. Completely covered. What movie were we talking about? Coraline, right? We're not talking about Airwolf today, but we should. We should always be talking about Airwolf, to be honest. I think it's hilarious, JJ. You and I are loving it. The younger two here are like, what the fuck are these geezers talking
about?
I'm
just looking at pictures of the show. And it,
Why are you doing that deep dive when you get some free time? Manimal. Look up Manimal.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? No, I know this because, hold on. Let me show you Skid's Discord icon.
Manimal.
I'm going to put it in the chat.
It's
so that we can all see Manimal. Yes.
Oh, man.
I've heard of it.
Oh, I think we were talking about the originality of Coraline that got us on this fantastic and wonderful tangent. Oh.
This looks like Animorphs.
It was Animorphs before Animorphs.
Manimorphs.
Oh.
You know, before I watched Coraline, I was convinced that I'd seen it before.
Okay.
And once we started watching, I was like, yeah, I've never seen this.
Oh.
In
my
life.
Did Angela like it?
I don't know what I guess I blurred it with Corpse Bride. And then seeing, like, it had so many video game releases.
Coraline?
And
it did.
Yeah, that's when I worked at GameStop. So I guess just seeing it on a day-to-day basis that way, I just it jumbled in my brain that, yeah, I've seen that.
I was going to say,
it has decent reviews, this video game.
I was going to say the animation studio did do contract work for the Corpse Bride. So, so maybe that's why it seems very familiar. And again, that tangent, the Corpse Bride is a Tim Burton movie. So again, why have these two never worked together?
I think or you mean Neil Gaiman and Tim Burton?
Yeah.
I feel like, did we Google this before?
I don't know if we have.
Feel like I've thought about this once before. Like, why?
Yeah. Oh.
Neil. Gaiman. Tim.
Okay.
Burton.
So while she's Googling that, JJ, who would you pick in a fight? Airwolf or Kit? I mean, Kit can turbo jump to get to Airwolf.
Yeah, I mean, we saw him jump through an 18-wheeler.
Yeah, that's right. Goliath.
Goliath the gargoyle?
Yeah, I think
Goliath
would have to be a draw.
18-wheeler.
If Kit had to do that, they're both dead.
Oh, yeah.
These sound like very ambitious from a visual effect standpoint for a TV show.
Oh, yeah. These things...
Did it just look like shit?
No, it was awesome. Well, kind of.
Huh.
Airwolf did...
It just seems like it would be incredibly expensive to get...
To be fair, Airwolf, most of the time it's on screen, is a RC... is an RC helicopter.
That makes sense.
Kit is... Most of the time, they had like a fleet of 1984 Pontiac... Firebird Trans Ams, so they weren't that expensive of a car, so they could make a bunch of them and they could wreck a bunch of them, and anytime he was driving by himself, there was just be a person in the back seat. You can actually see it a lot of the time.
Well, I can't find out if they hate each other or not.
Well, some things we'll just never know. You may have to, like, do you tweet at people now or do you, like, exit them? I don't know what you do anymore.
Well, the one thing I find was a Twitter thread. I won't call it X. An X thread. Of Neil Gaiman being annoyed that people think Tim Burton had anything to do with Coraline.
Mm. So maybe that's why.
Which, rightfully
yeah,
so.
Yeah, I get it.
somebody's asking for a live action one. They said, get Tim Burton on the phone right now. And he's like, bitch.
He's like, he would have Johnny Depp play Coraline.
And then he's like, and then somebody said, all white dudes who wear black look the same. And he's like, Henry Selick doesn't wear black. He's very active online, that Neil Gaiman. He responds to a lot of questions on Tumblr.
He is. He is a very, he also seems like quite a friendly fellow. He doesn't strike me as a bad dude. Not that these people do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know nothing about Henry Selick.
But I don't either.
He made a nice film.
He did. He's made several nice films, I believe.
I love Laika. I didn't see their latest one, the one with Bigfoot. That's the only one I haven't seen. Oh, yeah. Kubo made me cry like crazy. Box Trolls was okay. I actually think Box Trolls is the weakest that I've seen.
I thought it was funny enough.
I liked it. But I just thought, like, of them, it was the weakest. I think Coraline's my favorite. Paranorman's my second favorite. Then Kubo. Then Box Trolls. I haven't seen the Bigfoot one. I'm really excited for Wildwood, though, because that looks like it's a bit creepier.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I've only seen, like, they sort of showed a teaser, but I looked up the source material, and it seems very interesting. So I'm excited for that.
Hmm.
When is Wildwood coming out?
Yeah, this is the first movie I've seen.
Oh, I have no idea. They just announced it, so I feel like it's going to be 2 years. 2025.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Here's the... Oh, hold on. Let me, I got a freaking stupid, no script. I love it, but I hate it. Here's the link. Paste. Looks like it'll be nice and creepy.
All right. Yeah, I totally forgot about the Bigfoot movie. Was that 2019? Was that right before COVID? Or
I think it was like right along that time.
Yeah, I think so. Or wow, it won. Hey. It got nominated for stuff. It's not a bad movie. I think I'll watch that.
April 12th, 2019. So yeah. As soon as COVID hit, it pretty much got.
No, it was a year before COVID.
Well, wait.
2020 was COVID.
Was it? Weren't people starting to get sick in 2019?
Yeah, it was early.
Near the end of it.
Like December. Yeah.
I bought a mask to go to Disney World in February, but that was when like people were still. It was before it officially got over here. Like people were just talking about it on Twitter, and they were freaking me out. So I bought a mask to wear on a plane.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it did not do well. Apparently, the missing link one.
I'm not surprised, but I'm glad that it's not stopping them from continuing on, because Wildwood sounds great.
Looks pretty cool. All right, anybody else got anything to say about either Coraline or Airwolf at this point?
No.
All right, well, we'll table the discussion on Coraline. Of course, Airwolf is an ongoing topic of discussion and forever shall be. We'll see you next time on Fun Sphere Movie Club. Bye.
Bye.
All right. Both of our Samantha, Michael, you are required to watch one episode of Airwolf before we meet again.